So I was given a very interesting topic for today's discussion, how to follow Vaishnava etiquette in the age of internet, Well, I don't think there is a Vaishnava etiquette specifically designed for the internet. Maybe the Vaishnava etiquette did not predict the invention of internet. There is Vaishnava etiquette in that regard too. First, let's take a quick look into what internet is. Internet is a technological product. Modern humans have an interesting relationship with technology. We don't quite know what kind of attitude to take towards technology. Sometimes we love it, sometimes we hate it, sometimes we fear it. Whatever it is, we continue to develop it. Now, what's interesting is that people often communicate without actually looking intimately into the very meaning of the words they use. So typically when we speak of technology, only some portion of the audience will correctly relate to the thing that the word indicates. So what is technology? Let me see my... It's a system. That's my definition here. It is a system. And it is a system that's applied for three specific reasons. One thing is automation, to automate everything, make it automatic. This is what we typically do. Every time we have to repeat something over and over again, we start to think how to automate it. Especially if the task is tedious. What's the Slovenian for tedious? Okay. Zvuči dobro. Okay. So technology is a system, and it is a system that tends to do three things. It's driven by these three things. One thing is automation. The other thing is it wants to increase efficiency. And the third one is that it wants to increase abilities. So if we look around, we're surrounded by technology. Everywhere we look, we find technology. This floor here is a product, is a technological product. The building that we're sitting in, the cloths we wear. I mean, if we had to... Actually, mine is made by hand. I bought it in a village in India because it was handmade. But if we had to hand make every single thread all the time, we would naturally start to think how to automate the process, how to increase efficiency, and how to increase our ability, in this case, to produce this cloth. So this cloth is also a technological product. We're good with lights? Okay. Another technological invention. There's nothing wrong with technology. In that sense, also there's nothing wrong with the internet. It's yet another technological invention that is meant to do these three things: to automate procedures, to increase our abilities, and to increase efficiency. By the way, Hare Krishna tradition is a monistic, not monotheistic, but monistic tradition, in the sense that we don't consider anything intrinsically evil. So technology also is not evil by itself. The moral dimension that technology or anything else gets is from us, namely how we use it and for which purposes we use it, with which intentions. That's the Vaishnava Hare Krishna tradition concept. So the internet, just by itself, is, we could say, morally neutral. It's neither evil nor good. It really depends. Actually, ultimately, we would say that everything that in some ways everything comes from God. So, in that sense, it has a potential to be divine. Divine, ultimately, divine is the ultimate form of good. But here's the problem. If internet, like all other technologies, internet is a fantastic invention. It increases our abilities. It automates procedures. And it increases efficiencies. What does that do? It doesn't do to us, but it enables us to do what? It enables us to engage our propensities in a more intense way. So whatever propensities we have, now we become empowered to engage these propensities even stronger. And this is where the problem lies. So the problem is not really with technology, in this case the internet, but it's really with the person, with the people. And the Hare Krishna concept is that every soul in its original state is pristine. It's pristine, it's pure. And the physical creation, the world that we find ourselves in right now, is a collective of souls that could use some more spiritual purity. To put it politely, that was a euphemism. So let's look at some cardinal tendencies that are characterized by the lack of spiritual health. The first one is, I have listed 1, 2, 3, 4. There are way more than 4. We'll take a look at 4 as it relates to today's subject. First one is the lack of respect. The lack of respect. The lack of respect and the emotional distancing are the necessary preconditions for the execution of evil. So, lack of respect and the emotional distancing. For example, Nazi Germans, in order to allow themselves, make it even possible for themselves to commit atrocities against Jewish population in Poland, Germany, Russia, and wherever they went in Europe, they could not have considered them human beings. They often relate to them as subhuman beings, more like animals. And this is called depersonalization, or there's another term, nowadays it's very popular. What is it? No, there is, that's true, that's absolutely true. But there's a term that's really tossed around these days a lot. It doesn't matter. I'm against the clock, so if I remember, I'll come back to it. Objectification. Objectification. In other words, in your own mind, you convert a person into a thing. It's not a being anymore, but in your mind becomes a thing. You see, you can do things to a chair, but you cannot do things to a being. If you do things to a being, that has a moral dimension. If you do things to an object, there is no moral value to it. For it to have a moral value, it would have to relate to a living being. Disrespect and the emotional distancing are prerequisite for the execution of evil. Now, evil could be tiny, and evil could be massive, and anything in between. every time we abuse someone, and we have all abused someone, at least verbally, I've done it. And that was in the moments when we didn't perceive the person in front of us as a person who is in the state that is in for reasons. We sort of forgot that. We're just thinking, this person is right now annoying me. And then slowly we become aware of our own needs, and we become not aware of the needs of this person, and then we're capable of actually being cruel or committing evil on some level, minuscule or grand. This kind of depersonalization or objectification is typically realized or caused by two things. One thing is atheism. Now, atheism, of course, some people would disagree with me, but I can't help it. It's my opinion. And I have reasons for it. For those of you who are interested, Krishna discusses this in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the difference between the divine and the demonic person. So atheism is this belief that there's nothing divine in existence, that nothing has intrinsic value. It's all just a pile of matter. But to a theist, I'll give you an example. On those days when, at least in the United States of America, they once, twice a year, they celebrate Earth Day. And on that day, almost always, you hear and read slogans, "Don't trash the environment, because trashing environment hurts us." And what's really interesting to me, it is really impressive, that no one thinks how intensely selfish that statement is. So we ought to not trash the environment because it trashes us. That's really selfish. That's self-centered. That's immoral. From the Krishna conscious, Hare Krishna point of view, no, the nature has its right for existence. Why would the man, the human, be the arbitrary, the judge, arbiter or the judge of the good? So, in the Hare Krishna tradition, we believe that there's the ultimate supreme being, and we have a very intimate name for the supreme being, that's Krishna. And that being has an absolute value just by his existence. And we, being parts and parcels of that being, also have intrinsic value. And even if some of us behave, maybe even atrociously, we still have to respect that being, not because of their behavior, but because they're part and parcel of the Supreme Being. And as this is so for all beings, it is so for of all human beings, it is so for all of the beings. Okay. No. Nisam to zbunjeni. So this is very important. So, in other words, the person, because of the social contract, you know what a social contract is? It's a contract we enter. We are a society, and in the society we have certain rules. And we don't break these rules because there are consequences. But we don't think that these rules communicate intrinsic values. We don't break these rules because we think it's evil. We just think it's not worth it, man. That's social contractism. But in the mind of a theist, the person does not commit evil because evil is evil. You improve my lecture. Those reading translation are getting more. No, that was good. That was good. And then, okay, so that's atheism. And the other is spiritual atheism. This is my term. And it's not precisely accurate, but it does paint the picture good enough. Spiritual atheism. What is spiritual atheism? Spiritual atheism is when you have an atheist trying to become a theist. And the person is going through the motions of a theist, but deeply psychologically still an atheist. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavat Purana, which is displayed, not here, maybe somewhere else. There are some. There are a few copies here, yeah, I noticed. Archayam eva haraye pujitam yashradehate natat bhakteshu chanyeshu sa bhakta prakrita smritaha. That's the Sanskrit, Sanskritam, the verse in Sanskritam. And the translation is that this kind of a person, atheist, who's trying to become a theist and is going through the motions of theism, but psychologically still an atheist, that's a person who is capable of respecting the deity. Capable of respecting the deity, but incapable of respecting anyone else, including people who are on the path, on the divine path, religious path, and even those who are not on the religious path, disrespect them all. Why? Because that person has still not realized that these other beings are also divine beings, they're parts and parcels of Krishna, who currently may be in a good or bad moral or spiritual health. But irrespective of that, person who's a theist has not only respect, but actually even describes love for all beings. And that's a saint. And the sainthood is, by the way, the goal of Krishna consciousness. Okay, so this respect and the emotional distancing. The next problem, the next thing that's essential to a conditioned soul, as we would say in the Hare Krishna movement, conditioned soul. So that's a soul, but who has forgotten his spiritual nature and doesn't experience himself as such. Identification with the body, with the physical body, where the person is not seeing himself as a spiritual being, but the person is seeing himself as a physical product, as a biological machine that's fragile, etc., etc. And what's peculiar, how do you say peculiar? What's peculiar about it is that that the person, not only such a person, not only does he identify with the gross physical body, the bones and skin, etc., etc., but the person is identifying with the urges that are a product of the physical body, like the urge to eat, urge to talk, urges of the senses. The senses like to couple with sense objects for the sake of pleasure, like the eyes want to join with the objects of sight that are beautiful. The skin likes to touch something which is smooth, and etc., etc. And so this person, because person identifies himself with the body, therefore identifies himself with these urges, thinks these are my urges. The person thinks satisfying these urges constitutes the success of life. And if this person ever attempts to control his urges, it's only for the reason of providing more sensual satisfaction. All this will come together in 5 minutes. Third, assuming an awful lot. This is another symptom of a conditioned soul. That the conditioned soul tends to assume an awful lot. Even when we don't have sufficient information to make a judgment, we do make judgments and perpetrate evil. Attack another person because we have heard. We abuse or attack another person because we have seen something. There is a saying that thinking is hard, so I judge. Well, I'm glad you're laughing. Means you can relate to it. I can relate to it. I don't have time to describe this incident, but in the Srimad Bhagavatam there's another incident between Daksha and Shiva in the 6th canto of the Bhagavatam. Who has read this section of the Bhagavatam? Daksha and Shiva. This story of Daksha and Shiva, there are 3 stories consecutive, and they describe devotional, spiritual, religious Hare Krishna service in the modes of nature. Sorry, I'm talking now foreign language, but in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion, and in the mode of goodness. And this story, this incident between Shiva and Daksha depicts a behavior of a religious person influenced by the mode of darkness. Unfortunately, I don't have time to describe that, but for those who are familiar with these terms, I thought I would mention that. Where Daksha assumed an awful lot. And his assumptions were fueled by his imagination. All resting on the platform of false ego. He's disrespected me. He has entered the room and didn't pay obeisances to me. And he built in his mind, he built this picture that this Shiva is a monstrous person who needs to be punished. And then all kinds of things came out of it. Okay, and then the fourth, false ego and insecurity. Because when the person identifies with this fragile, this body is super fragile, including our subtle body, mind, intelligence, emotions, super fragile. Super fragile. How do you say fragile in Slovenia? Krhko. Da, isto na hrvatski. So when the person identifies with this fragile machine, then the person becomes has a need to fortify themselves. The way this tends to reflect in our communications is when we talk with someone and when our opinions differ. This is not always the case, but it's really often the case. When our opinions differ, we just cannot agree to disagree. We absolutely have to have our opinion dominate and be accepted by the person whose opinion we want to dominate. Srila Prabhupada, the founder and the acharya of the Hare Krishna movement, gave the example of it's a story, it's a fictitious story, but it's a good one. Between two persons, they were fighting. One person said that it's easier to cut paper with scissors, and the other one said it's easier to cut with a knife. And they argued and argued and argued to the point where the argument became physical. They were fighting. And in one point, the knife fella, he proved to be physically stronger or advantageous, and he dunked the other person under the water. And as a person was drowning, he stuck his hand out and made a motion like this. And died in peace. I mean, where from this crazy maniac drive that our opinion has to dominate? It's so hard to just agree to disagree, let's say. Now, specifically, these are the reasons for which, if we have these propensities, and we do have them, and when we engage in internet conversations, communications, all of these simply amplify. Zygmunt Bauman, if I may mention one philosopher, Polish, who escaped to England, blah, blah, blah. He's over 90 years now. And I was reading his one of his analyses of the times we live in, where he mentions internet and the use of internet. He speaks of the prostitution of privacy. The fame, the attention that was previously available only to a few, now is available to a few more. Because of the internet. And specifically was referring to social media, and very specifically to Facebook. Again, as a media, it's morally neutral. But most of people are just mediocre. And what goes on in their lives is incapable of attracting attention of other people. They just don't have any specific content that they can put out on the internet that would attract attention of others and satisfy their thirst for attention. So what they do, they resort to prostitution of privacy. All kinds of details from their private lives they put out in public. And when I mentioned this to a devotee, he said, well, that's not that bad, as long as they're not prostitutilizing, I just made that word, others' privacy. Yeah. And this is what tends to take place. Anyhow, detail. Specifically, I mean, a whole lot of religious institutions have problems with this. And then, so you have people who are fragile, who are on the platform of false ego. You have people who are fearful. You have people who are self-centered. You have people who are incapable of quality thinking or analyzing situation. You have people who have a urge to be heard and seen and receive a whole lot of attention. And these people then dig up other people's dirty laundry and put it all on the internet. And they actively, proactively search for this kind of dirty content. Even if it goes against their own very institution within which they enjoy the privilege of spiritual support. Hiding in anonymity. Many of the things we say on the internet, we would never, ever say to the person in person. But we hide in anonymity, and very often people even have fake profiles, and so they can shoot profanities and allow for their otherwise low urges to just shoot out and contaminate the cyberspace. Okay, I'm going to have to skip all of that because I want to give some time to the solution. So thus far we sort of analyzed the situation. Now we can talk a little bit about the solution. Oh, good. I forgot to translate this into Croatian, so it's still in English. For the individuals, for the souls that are decently spiritually healthy, or we could say decently spiritually developed, there is something such as Vaishnava etiquette. Vaishnava very specifically means the follower of the Hare Krishna tradition. And there is an etiquette. And this etiquette states, as I have mentioned thus far, that God is a supreme being who, by his very existence, is divine. Divine means valuable, ultimately valuable. And that all other beings are his parts and parcels, and therefore deserving, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, same kind of devotion. The form is different, but the quality is the same. And so in this way, everyone is worthy of our respect, even when we disagree with them. But the problem is that most of the people are terribly conditioned by these materialistic conditionings, lacking divine aspects in their character, and therefore their internet or cyberspace interactions are not characterized by the Vaishnava etiquette. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, the founder, the Acharya of the Hare Krishna movement, says that therefore one should practice tapasya. Tapasya is a Sanskrit term and indicates something which is intense. What is tapasya? Yeah, that's typically the term we use. But tapasya is a form of discipline. That the person is autonomously accepting discipline. Voluntarily accepting discipline. And so this discipline makes up for the tapasya. And I will read to you Nectar of Instructions. That's Nektar Uputa, yeah? No, Slovensky. Nektar duhovnih napotko. How many of you have read this book? Okay. How many of you own this book? Owners, okay. How many of you will buy this book later on? Not available? Oh, it's available. Okay, good. It's a fantastic book, and it's a really tiny book, and it's packed with potent instructions. First verse, it's written in verses, and the first statement, first mantra, first verse, tells us of the urges that we have by the mere virtue of having this body. We have a physical body, and because of having a physical body, we have certain urges. And to control these urges, not to give in to these urges, but to identify with the soul rather than the body, we begin to think that these urges are not me. This is something that's foreign to me. And therefore, we utilize these urges as it is advantageous in our spiritual development. But first we need to know what these urges are. And one of them is the urge to talk. Prabhupada says, when people meet, they talk. Or when people meet online, they type. They type. So, while commenting on this verse, expanding on it, Srila Prabhupada wrote, first I should say that in the beginning Srila Prabhupada discusses the concept of atonement, to atone, iskupienia. To atone is to iskupitise. Yeah, okay. And we have all been here. We've done stuff and we regretted it. And we said never again, only to do it again. And so Srila Prabhupada discusses this idea of us trying not to do the thing again, to atone, but yet after the atonement we do it all over again. So now follows the paragraph. Real atonement involves coming to real knowledge. And for this, there is a standard process. Now you should all dance in ecstasy that there is a process for this. In other words, there is a process that we take to that process and kaboom. How did you translate kaboom? When one follows a regulated hygienic process, he does not get sick. This means that before we do the stupid thing, we could do things that would prevent us from doing the stupid thing. A human being is meant to be trained. Trained according to certain principles. To revive his original knowledge. Mind you the strong words. A human being is meant for this. This is the purpose of existence. So, a human being is meant to be trained according to certain principles. To revive his original knowledge. Such a methodical life is described as tapasya. Okay, and now I skipped a few things because I had to choose something, couldn't just read the whole book here. One more paragraph. First, one must control his speaking power. Every one of us has the power of speech. As soon as we get an opportunity, we begin to speak. If we do not speak about Krishna consciousness, we speak about all sorts of nonsense. A toad in a field, toad is a frog. A toad in a field speaks by croaking. And similarly, everyone who has a tongue wants to speak. Even if all he has to say is nonsense. The croaking of a toad, however, simply invites the snake. Please come here and eat me. What Srila Prabhupada is referring to here is that if we use this tapasya to control, to discipline our interactions, very specifically our speaking, our communication with others, in such a way that that's only spiritually productive speech, not destructive but productive, then we spiritually develop. Otherwise, we're simply inviting the snake to swallow us, like the frog that croaks and then simply discloses its location to a snake. And this snake is a lower kind of existence. Okay, my time is up. So I'll have to stop there and ask for if there is a question that we can satisfy within 60 seconds. Very good. There is one. Yes.
And you figure out about the social media. It means like Facebook and all those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said, I didn't get you because I don't know if you said it is bad or I don't know if you say it is good. I just figured out you talk about social media, but I didn't understand exactly what you want to mention for that.
I don't want to... please forgive me, my time's up. But I answered that question about 10 times. I said it's morally neutral like everything else. I said that Vaishnava's theology is monistic in the sense that we perceive everything as morally neutral. As a matter of fact, everything belonging to Krishna. But what... everything, like social media, gains moral value by the way we use it.
Arivo. Gora Premanandi.
Maybe you came late or something, but I believe this was recorded, so you can listen over. You know, things are not black and white. There are layers to the truth. Okay. Thank you for your attention. Hare Krishna.